Hello, and welcome to The More You Look, Up Close, a short, unscheduled stop on your behind-the-scenes journey into museum collections, research exhibits, and public programming. In this episode, we continue the conversation with filmmaker and UAMN film curator emeritus, Leonard Kamerling, that began in episode 16, The Silences. We continue with Len's thoughts on the cycles of culture shock and the difficulty and value in being an outsider, new projects, and curating old media.
I'm interested in knowing what, if you've got any new projects that have come your way recently that you're excited about, just getting started on, you got something that's you can't talk much about, but it's just maybe some of that excitement. Oh,
yeah. Well, one of the really exciting things that I've been doing is working with these African filmmakers who are making amazing films that are, I mean, their reality is so far from our universe as, you know, as Americans. The kinds of realities that they deal with, the kind of problems that they deal with that are addressed in these films are really kind of, you know, for me, just have been very mind-expanding and expanding of my emotional world as well. So I'm working with several students from Cameroon who are getting their PhDs in Norway and are making films as part of their PhD work. So they're visual anthropologists that are, you know, that are making films. Yeah. But the project that is still an idea that I'm thinking about for the future is just came out of a conversation and another film that a friend had made years ago, is that there are there's a school in the East, a Christian school, that trains peace negotiators. And these are people who, after their training, go into different, you know, hot spots in the world and negotiate truces between, you know, rebel forces and, you know, wars that are ceasefires and wars that are going on. And they're sort of unknown. I mean, you never hear about them.
Right. Diplomacy on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. You never hear their names, you never know about them. But these are the people who do the actual work, you know, who go in and, like, make these changes. And it comes from a sort of, you know, religious, from kind of a faith standpoint. And they're trained at a Methodist university. But that really interests me, who these people are. And the culture of it. You know, the culture of kind of putting oneself in these situations and never getting any credit for it. Mm-hmm. And never wanting to be identified with it. Mm-hmm. Is very interesting as a cultural phenomenon. So what do you believe in, and how do you live your life to be able to do that?
That sounds like a perfect example of a kernel of an idea. Because, you know, when I hear you say that, I immediately think, maybe the same way, that your personal interest in this story may start with the idea that it's something you would never consider yourself doing, and it's very other.
And yet,
because of that standpoint, it intrigues, and I can see the openness of the story, how you wouldn't know where it's going, what the individual stories are. There's so many different dimensions there, but you can almost guarantee that just going through those conversations and the filmmaking, that you would immediately learn and grow and understand a different side of yourself, not just different other people.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's part of this whole process. I mean, the personal side is when you take on a film and you go deeply into a culture and you come out differently. Mm-hmm. You learn something, and as you say, I mean, it's always like looking in a mirror for the first time. I mean, when you're in the midst of, you know, this sort of cultural milieu, this cultural world that's not your own, it's like a mirror. You see yourself differently, and you come out the other end, you know, somewhat changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. It requires yourself to come in pretty chill and flexible.
Yeah.
In the first place, I, you know, one of the things I had great fortune of doing over the last couple decades is documenting field work. So you're out with a paleontologist, and you're out with a botanist,
yeah,
and you're out on a ship for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Each one of those is its own little microculture.
Right.
Of how things happen, and every single instance, I'm the outsider, and that gets to me sometimes. Like, mm-hmm, I'm not part of any of these groups of people,
yeah,
and yet it's fascinating because you are the outsider, and if you can go in with the right mental attitude, you know, and right framework, that you're there to learn, you're there to be humbled by what these people do, you know, for a living. There's so much fantastic story that comes out of it.
And being the outsider is, you know, one of the keys that sort of helps to unlock stories, because as outsiders, we're not subject to the same social rules. So you can ask questions that no one else will ask. And people are freer to talk than they normally would be. So it's an asset as well as a liability.
I like that. I like that it's an asset. No, I think it's very clear that it is. It opens doors at the same time that just requires of yourself to, among other things, it's okay to be uncomfortable. It's okay to be at sea without
yeah,
knowing what comes next.
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, when I first went to Tanzania to work on the film that became Changa Revisited that I did with Peter Biela, it was very disorienting for me. And I had, you know, spent my career dealing with cycles of culture shock. And I knew how it worked. And I knew what to anticipate. But there, it just was totally different. And just much more intense. Mm-hmm. But it, again, in a sense, it was like a mirror. You know, it afforded me an opportunity to see myself in a way that I never have before.
That's very hard work to do.
It's really hard work.
What makes you go back? I mean, I know myself answer the question, but what makes you go back to do it again?
Well, it becomes sort of addictive in a way. I mean, you go through this. I mean, it's almost like going through an initiation, and something comes out at the end that's very euphoric and wonderful, and you know, when a door opens and you can look at and be in another culture and see it in a different way and just make connections that kind of transcend the culture and the language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're making these human connections. That's the moment. And then if you can translate that in film, if you can communicate that to an audience, those moments, then the film is something that people never forget.
My difficulty with the world and media, whether it's fiction or documentary, is that it gets to a point where I'm not comfortable with the massive amount of information available. Maybe that's because I'm getting older. And I think there are probably good tools for navigating it and finding the sub-basements. But I'm concerned going forward into this next decade that it's only going to, I'm going to use the word morass, is only going to get heavier. And I want to hear some of the some bright points in terms of like, here's the, and you're very positive in your outlook. You're very maybe less so, but I'm interested in seeing where how this stuff gets archived and appropriately curated and protected and accessible all at the same time.
It's a challenge that the sort of the parameters of the challenge change like almost on a weekly basis. And because of the amount of material that's, you know, that's being produced, new digital material. And the reality is that the vast majority of this digital material is going to go away. It's going to end up in the future on obsolete hard drives or in operating systems that nobody can access anymore or in dead websites. And, you know, it's just going to disappear because in this expansive digital age where we have this like incredible cameras on our phones. No one really thinks about where these images are going to be in 20 years, or even if they should be anywhere in 20 years. And of these tens of thousands of pictures that people take a year, which of those have importance, value for you and your family? And if there are some that do, what are you going to do with them to keep them, to preserve them for the future? And that's an important thing that people don't think about and should.
Curation.
Yeah, curation. But I think everybody needs to be their own curator because everyone is producing images. Everyone's producing media. And on our phones, you know, we don't take one picture, we take five. And what's going to happen to those?
Yeah, I was at a moment of concern a few years ago. Gave my daughter a camera, maybe it was a new camera or an old Instamatic camera, and she was about 10 or so. And she got really into taking pictures and video, and I mean of everything. And so we're pretty organized in terms of how we archive our photos and back everything up. And it just the data spike that occurred when she started doing this was phenomenal. I mean, this is where me and my wife are shooting off our cell phones. So we got lots of photos too. But her spike was insane. Mm. And I was like, I was starting to think about how all this is going to work as we, okay, another year, you know, 5 years of this. Luckily, it was a spike. And she came down to much more sane picture-taking habits. And again, the quality of the photos and what the photos are of. I'm sure there's gold in there somewhere, yeah. But there's a lot of blurry stuffed animals, you know, shots of stuffed animals and poses.
Right.
So, yeah, and going in at some point and going through that mound of data and trying to curate it so that, again, everything fits in these nice... Because I find when the data gets beyond a certain point, you no longer can deal with it in the same way that you would have otherwise. Like if it fits in this nice little package, we can move it around, we can migrate it through media. But once it gets to a certain point, that migration becomes that much harder. So you're less likely to do it as often or at all, you know, in a certain time period.
Yeah. Well, I've been teaching a class in called Saving Your Family Photos. And a lot of people that take the class are older and they've inherited photo collections from their parents and grandparents. So this is like mixed media. There are 35 millimeter slides, color prints, black and white photos from you know, the 20s or earlier, and masses of digital photos from, you know, the past 20 years. And, you know, the main kind of feeling is like being overwhelmed of how to deal with this. So what I recommend, what I try to teach, is dealing with small pieces of this and making quick decisions about what's of value and what's not of value, and moving the things that are of value to like a separate place, and then the other stuff you're never going to look at again. Mm-hmm. And so you end up with a small amount of things that are worthwhile, that you want to save. And just as a kind of a strategy for starting to get into it. And all of those pictures you have from your parents where you don't know who the people are in the picture, those have zero value, and throw those out.
But it sounds like you're editing a film here.
Like, well, exactly.
Cut, I have 45 hours, I need 20 hours, then 10 hours, then 5 hours.
That's kind of what it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm way behind on my own family collection, which is enormous.
It's been fantastic. Thank you for stopping by.
Sure. Yeah, of course. This is fun.
Thank you to Len Kamerling for another of the many conversations we've had over the years. We should have recorded more of them. I'm sure we have a little more room in the digital archive. The More You Look is a production of the UA Museum of the North on the campus of the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the ancestral lands of the Dene people of the lower Tanana River. UAMN illuminates the natural history and cultural heritage of Alaska and the North through collections, research, education, and partnerships, and by creating a singular museum experience that honors diverse knowledge and respect for the land and its peoples. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe, share, and rate the program. This helps other listeners discover more about not only the work of this museum, but quite possibly other museums in their neighborhoods. The more you look, the more you find.